Alrighty, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. It is raining here on the North Shore. And people are quite happy about that, I'll tell you. I'm going to make sure we got no static here. We don't. And it's been a while. It's been a fantastic start to the summer. And this is a Monday night. I'm Rick Moore. Got to clear the static up for you. And I can't do that just yet. Hold on, Tim. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and this is North Shore Sports Night. We will be switching over to our new software very, very soon, probably within the next week or two, and so we won't have this problem with the static. Coach, how you doing?
I'm well, Rick. Very good. How are you?
Same, man. You know, it's been an incredible summer. I mean, we had the worstest spring. We had a great mild winter, which is not so cool if you're a skier, but not so good a spring. But man, the last two, three, 4 weeks have been unbelievable.
Yeah, it really has. You know, and we are in a drought situation in most of Northeast Massachusetts. And even though the next 3 days are filled with rain, I read a report today that the amount of rain we get will still not relieve the drought conditions here in the Northeast. But certainly it is needed to green up some grass.
Yeah, and I've noticed even with the rain that we've gotten, all the yellow and brown spots out front are beginning to get a little more color, get a little greener, a little healthier looking. Tim, so much to talk about, but first, I always like to pick your brain politically because I don't want to say you're on the far left. You're to the left of center is more accurately, I think, described. But the latest revelations coming from the New York Times, Washington Post, and so on about the possible bounty on American troops placed by the Russians. That concern you at all, or you just kind of poo-poo it? Like the president says, it just didn't rise to the level of credibility.
Yeah, all the intelligence services all confirmed that they had evidence that this actually had taken place, and yet he finds the ability to say, oh, well, it really wasn't credible. Well, nothing the Russians have done since he became president that is negative in nature has any credence with him. It's not to be believed. It's fake news. So this is just another example of, you know, the Congress needs to get to the bottom of it. The Republicans need to, you know, remove the thumbs from certain orifices on their bodies and stand up to this president and demand the proof, demand that the members of these intelligence communities appear before them and give their evidence and put the fire to this president's feet, because he constantly lies. We know he's in love with Kim Jong-un. We know he's in love with and a great admirer of the Russians. Nothing they can do. If you're a dictator, you're good to go with Trump, because that's what his own personal aspirations are. And, you know, at some point, Congress has to do their job. And, you know, we can only hope that the House, the House remains the same and the Senate flips in the fall, so that, yeah, you will have some investigations and you will have a look into Mr. Trump and his activities while he was president and hold them to account, because it's been one systematic failure after another, one lie after another, that has put this country in the position that we're in, and, you know, we're the laughingstock of the world, unfortunately, in terms of how we dealt with coronavirus, you know, and militarily we've scoffed at our allies, we have cozied up to our enemies. So it's a horrible situation that the nation finds itself in, and unfortunately, you know, we have these two major distractions of the coronavirus and the Black Lives Matter movement, which has really come into its own in the light of George Floyd's death, and the call for the need for reform and action taken that have sort of blinded people to the other events around the world that are wreaking havoc with this country.
All right. That's our political comment for the day, and I thank for that, as always. Tim, so much to talk about here. I'm going to try something different tonight. We have just Gary Larrabee lined up, and that's my fault. Not a fault, not to have Gary on, but I was not able to make connections with other sports figures in the area, and we have for lo these many years, I think since, 2005 or 2006. And on this particular Monday night, it's Gary, you, and me. And I'm hoping that if we have a listener or two, we can open up the lines here in this first half hour. We can try opening up the phone line if you have a comment. And what I'm going to suggest is, my thing is, Tim, I want to start with, everybody has a retrospective during this coronavirus thing when there's no actual sports going on. And my thing is, what is the... your best sports memory that comes to mind, bing, like that. I have one that comes to mind, and I'm wondering if we can just open that up. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to put a phone number out there, 978-281-8718, 978-281-8718. It's a local number, and I don't really have a great system for this. We haven't rigged it for phone calls. But let's just see. We did this in the first year or two. Remember that, Tim, with the Winthrop High School kids, the football players?
Yep. That was always a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they called in, and they had some great comments, and it was really cool talking about the team and other players and so on. But I'll open it up. And the question is, what is your best sports memory that comes to mind without thinking about it? Boom, on top of your head. And I'll start with you, Tim. What is your best sports memory?
Well, the one that, again, as you mentioned that came right into my mind was the first time that my brother and I, along with my dad, we walked into Fenway Park to see the Red Sox play. And we walked up from below up to the ground level.
Mm-hmm.
And we were on the first base side. And
see that field open up in front of you?
And there was the wall.
Yep.
The players were out there loosening up. And I remember my dad pointing out Jackie Jensen and saying...
Number four.
Identifying who he was, and he was the Red Sox right fielder at the time, and he mentioned just this really odd, quirky fact about him. Jackie Jensen hated to fly.
Yep, that's correct.
He took a train to every game.
Yep.
And I've never forgotten that.
That's funny, yeah. I did forget about that, yeah. I remember reading about that. And Jensen was the RBI leader, a couple of years there, I believe, in the league.
He was a very good hitter.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. And not that this was the one I'm thinking of, but I do remember my uncle took me to a Red Sox game, and I want to say it was 1958, 59, or 60. It's somewhere in that. No. It had to be before that because we moved to Germany 7 when Ted Williams I think he actually won the batting crown that year, 57 and 58. But I got to see Ted Williams as a 10-year-old. And I don't remember much about that game except seeing Ted Williams come to bat.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't recall if it was 60 or 61 when we went. But I remember I could name you the Red Sox infield and outfield.
Eddie Brousseau at shortstop?
Eddie Brousseau, Frank Malzone.
Chuck Schilling?
Chuck Schilling, Pete Runnels.
Pete Runnels.
Yep, big tall Pete Runnels.
Gary Geiger?
I believe it was Yazin left, Geiger in center.
No, not Yaz that early. Nope. Mm-mm. Nope.
61?
Nope.
Yes, it was because he played 22 years.
You think he started in 61?
He retired in 83.
Okay, all right. Now, do you know what position he played in the minors?
Yeah, he was an infielder.
Second base. Yeah. Just like Mookie. Yep, same thing.
With an arm like that, he's throwing from second base, holding first base. I'd be wearing a suit of armor if I had Yaz playing.
Oh, God, yeah.
Base.
Yeah. Oh, that's...
And of course, Jackie Jensen was in right field.
Now, who was the catcher? Was it Pagliarone back then or Tillman? Who was it?
I believe at that point in time it was Bob Tillman.
Yeah, okay.
And then Bob Tillman and then Mike, God, I just saw his picture the other, Mike Ryan.
I did get to see one or two games as an adult with Pedro or Roger Clemens pitching, either one of them pitching. And it was, I remember the Red Sox weren't that particularly good, but to go to a game to see either Clemens or Pedro pitch, that's what you, that's what I paid the money for.
Yeah. Well, I was in right center field for the 78 playoff game against the Yankees.
Oh no!
That was a big heartbreak. But whenever I think of the Red Sox, I always, one of my first memories is always the first time my dad took my brother and I there, and again we walked up, and it was just like they show in the movies. The field just opened up.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, you know what's funny? One of my first memories, and it's not the one that jumped into my head, but I grew up as an Army brat, and so we were in Germany my 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade years. And so we had the Armed Forces Network, and we listened to the game of the week, which was an afternoon game, but it was on at night over there. And it was strictly on radio. There was no television. So when I came back to the States in 62... to watch my very first game on television was like, oh man, this is like being in heaven. This is incredible to watch it on TV, because we had always heard it on radio. And I don't even remember what the game was. I think it might have been the Red Sox. I was at my dad's aunt's house watching the Red Sox play on local TV. But it was, and then of course going to Fenway, it's like going to any major league stadium. You walk through the gates, and then you see that stadium open up, and it's just jaw-dropping.
Oh, yeah, it really is. Especially when you're a youngster, you know, and you suddenly, these are the games that, you know, you've seen occasionally on TV, you listen to them on the radio. And that was one of my favorite things to do, was to sit out on the back steps at my parents' house and to I had my little transistor radio, and I had a school book, and I would sit there and I would score games.
Yep.
And I just had a blast doing that.
Yep. Well, I remember as a kid, I don't know, sixth grade maybe, getting all the baseball cards you could. Now, at that time, if any kids are listening to what we're talking about here, back then there were two leagues, the American League and the National League, as there are now, but there were only 8 teams in each league. And you buy the baseball cards, and I guarantee you know the lineup of every single team in both leagues, am I right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was amazing. I mean, you know, there's so fewer teams. And but yeah, you knew most of those players, and you knew who the All-Stars were. It was just a different time, Rick, you know? And how many of those cards did we buy and then lose playing flip?
I know.
Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, my God. God, yeah. Who did I throw away?
I forgot about that. Yeah, was that with the pennies or with the cards? I can't remember.
Oh, that was with the cards.
With the cards.
That was with the cards.
You flip them into a hat or something.
You put them up against. You flip up against a wall.
Okay.
And then the other guy would go, and he'd try to cover your cards. And
oh man!
Oh my God!
Yeah.
That was intense.
Oh God! All right, we'll try it again. 978-281-8718 if you want to check in. My sports memory, Tim, that comes to mind for me, it's funny, doing these games so many years on WESX and then on MSO, the first one that jumped in my head was my daughter's 2017 playoff game as a senior in the springtime, when the Gloucester won its first lacrosse playoff game in history, as you know, for the girls of varsity. And that's the one that just jumped in my head for some reason. I said, yeah, it was raining, it was cold, it was freezing, but I don't even remember who they beat. But it was just so cool to do that. But sports, I think the big gap right now in all of this is the fact that we don't have live sports to root for. I know that you do, looking at those crazy people over there in Europe. Am I right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. In fact, I watched part of the match today till I fell asleep taking my nap.
Okay.
I wasn't great about retirement, man. 2 o'clock, it was nap time.
My wife calls a nap a gift from God. So there you go.
But it's so different, you know. There's no fans in the stadiums. Certain stadiums have they put up pictures of of the season ticket holders in their seats. And so you have all these cardboard cutouts.
No, man.
It's like a scene from Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
All the cardboard cutouts. NBC pipes in crowd noise appropriate for the situation on the TV broadcast. There's no noise at the stadium, and you can also opt out of the noise on the NBC broadcast if you want to. So you can just see them play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how much of the game you hear. I mean, you hear them passing the ball.
Yep.
And you just hear the thud of the
ball. Do you remember a few years ago, and I can't remember how long ago it was, and by the way, this is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. Gary Larrabee will be with us this evening. Gary will be talking about another great finish on the tour, talking about qualifying for the Mass Amateur at the Renaissance Club in Haverhill, and also the New England Women's Amateurs Tournament beginning at North Conway in the White Mountains. Checking in with Gary in a little while, and we'll tap him also for see what his greatest sports memory is. But I remember the tournament, and network league, where they showed a game from start to finish without announcers. They just had live mics at the field. And I thought that was the coolest thing, because that was just neat, because you could watch the game if you're paying attention. You can figure out what's going on all by yourself. You don't need the announcers to tell you what you're watching on the one hand. On the other hand, it's great when they tell you what you don't understand. But do you remember that game at all, Tim?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And of course, one of the things with the open mics is you got an awful lot of F-bombs flying around.
Yeah.
You know? So that was the danger of not having going live mic, but you had to be really aware of the sound delay to prevent a lot of FCC violations.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's strange watching them play without crowds, because crowds, especially at soccer matches, are so passionate. From singing the team song, they are so into the matches. It's incredible. The intensity is amazing, and I'm sure it's going to be hard for the players to go out there and play like in Wembley, a 90,000 seat stadium, and there's nobody there.
But hold on. You ever play a pickup game as an adult?
As an adult?
Yes. A pickup baseball, hockey, basketball, whatever it might be.
Now, by that point in my life, I was too injured.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I played basketball and hockey pickup games, and I played softball for many, many, many years as an adult. And, you know, if we had one spouse in the stands, that was an overflow crowd. You get out there and you play, and I can't even imagine at the pro level that you have to have a crowded stadium to have the competitive juices flowing.
Oh, I'm not saying that you don't have the competitive juices, but it just adds such an element to the game. It's something. No, these guys are intense. I mean, they're still tackling and whacking each other and going at it. But I think from the viewing standpoint, the intensity that the crowd adds to the whole broadcast is really something. But anyway, as especially a paid professional, should not need any motivation to get out there and play their butts off. And yeah, you know, even as a kid, you know, you're growing up and you get a few guys together and you get down and play, pick up basketball, football, baseball, hockey. We used to go to the ponds and we'd play hockey and. You know, you create your own enthusiasm, create your own excitement.
Absolutely. Okay.
But crowd noise does add to the enjoyment of the spectacle of the sport.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Absolutely. But I just want to see some live sports. So crowd or no crowd, man, just put it back on TV. Get the baseball guys out there. All right, let's bring it up to speed here now. Bill Newell and the Salem News sports guys, sports writers up on our site as well. They talk a little bit about what we're going to mention here, but it's seeming more and more that there is not going to be a high school football season or high school fall sports season in general, I should say. And we can get to that in a minute. It looks like there will be a little league season in most of the cities and towns around here. But before we get to that, Coach, all of pro sports is sort of taking a back door right now, appropriately so. But the big, big news coming out of the Patriots this week is the signing of Cam Newton, and I wonder what your reaction is on that.
Yeah, they wanted a name, they wanted someone with experience, and they certainly have gotten a name, and they've gotten a player with a vast amount of experience, a former MVP, led his team to a Super Bowl. So certainly, he's got a talent. His arm is, he certainly can heave it. His accuracy sometimes is called into question. His ability to put, pinpoint spirals out there is called into question sometimes. But there's no doubt he's a running threat. He can throw the ball. Is he an upgrade over Stidham in terms of experience? Certainly is. Will he, start? Well, remains to be seen. He's got to commit. He's got to earn that job. It's a Patriot-friendly, as most of them are, contracts. He can make up to $7.1 million next year, or this upcoming season, if he meets performance bonuses. That makes the team. He starts, I'm sure there are certain quotas that he has to achieve as well to get the max money. But still, that's a low-end contract for a quarterback of his renown. But again, he was hurt all last year. He played in two games last year. So he has been dinged up. So, you're taking a flyer on him. And, we can only hope that it works out, that he's able to bring a dimension the Pats haven't seen. I don't think Belichick's going to let him run around as much as he's done in the past. He's going to want him to become a bit more of a pocket passer, which means the offensive line is going to have to step up. The running backs are going to have to step up to help protect him and give him the time to look over the receivers the way that Brady could do so quickly. Just scan the field, find the guy, and get rid of it. In most instances, not always, but certainly. He's going to have to change a little bit, I think, in order to save the body. He's 31. He's not old. It remains to be seen. It's certainly exciting. A lot of people around here are excited for the signing. Does it make the Pats Super Bowl contenders? There's a lot of other pieces to the pie that the Patriots need to fill in. Before I think we can put them back in that. They're always, we've said the last 20 years, they're always going to be a contender with Belichick and Brady. Well, Brady's gone, then Cam Newton step in and now, become, not Tom Brady, but become the best version of himself again. That remains to be seen.
Perspective, if there is a football season, that this is 1999, 2000, or 2001 all over again. You've got some of the established veterans there, the McCourties on defense and those kinds of guys. You've got some young guys on offense. You've got a few seasoned veterans who have yet to be drafted to the team. You know how that happens during during preseason when they sign this guy and that guy from a team up front. But it's reminiscent to me of the early Tom Brady years when Drew Bledsoe was at the end of his career and Brady was at the beginning of his. And Tim, the thing that stood out with me that changed over the years was that team concept. And my dad always used to preach that as a Marine. Team, team, team. We're a team. It's not I, it's we all the way. That team concept won that first Super Bowl and maybe, propelled them into the next two after that. After that, of course, you had some superstars develop, and you had the magnificence of Tom Brady. But this, to me, is reminiscent of those. And if they can go 11 and 5, or 12-4.
Well, that's going to be how the season is going to be judged by what the record is. Are they going to be able to dominate the Eastern Division as they have in the past? We saw last year that the Jets were much better. And they should be better this year. Buffalo was much better last year. They should be even better this year, the way they drafted. So it's going to be a tough road in the East. And, you know, they lost a lot of good players. Once again, some guys came back, played 1 year, had good years, and went out and took the money. They didn't want to stay in New England. But they knew if they came here, played well, they'd get noticed, and they could turn it into a bigger paycheck, and they've done that. And we've lost some guys who were looking for that first big paycheck, and they got them.
How come
we've been like a feeder system for the rest of the NFL for the last 20 years?
How come we haven't been able to do that? I love it. I love the idea.
Yeah, I don't know. We tend to get guys on the latter part of their career rather than in the beginning or the middle of the career.
Oh, man.
But one of the things is we don't overpay them.
Excuse me. Are you saying I don't overpay? Are you saying I'm cheap?
Yeah, basically. Am I making a direct correlation between you and I and the Patriots? No.
I know. All right, listen. We'll see what happens. I'm hoping the Red Sox at least get out there and have, you know, I just want to watch some live sports. We'll see. I don't have a good feeling about the NFL this season. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't even have a good feeling about high school sports. And Tim, we got about 2 more minutes before we call Gary. I don't know any perspective on what to expect this fall.
For perspective, look what's happening in golf. They've been back, 2 weeks, and already 11 players have tested positive for the virus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we can only see it increasing. We've seen a surge in the number of cases throughout the South, the Midwest, and the West, because they failed to take stringent enough measures early on, and then they went and they just opened things up, and so the virus is rampaging through the country despite what the president and the vice president want to say. They're reaching critical points, and so as Fauci said earlier in the week, we're not out of the first stage yet, let alone the second wave. So, you know, we're getting into the summer and they expect a surge in the fall. It's going to be really tough, Rick, to maintain any kind of sport.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was going on with the PGA. We'll talk to Gary about that in just a minute here. We've talked a little bit, just rambled, which we don't usually do, but thanks for sticking with us. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. Gary Larrabee will be up next.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. institutionforsavingsloans.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Professional builders and remodelers choose Anderson Windows more than any other brand in the United States. They do so because Anderson Windows and Patio Doors offer beautiful natural wood interiors, low-maintenance exteriors, and outstanding energy efficiency. See the complete line of Anderson Windows at any of our 3 locations in Beverly, North Reading, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All righty then, we are back with Gary Larrabee now, a sports historian and golf writer. And there's one thing I got to ask Gary about before we finish this thing on his pray see his resume here, but that's for later. Gary, welcome back. How are you?
I'm thrilled to be back, Rick, and hi, Rick, and hi, Tim, and we're finally getting some rain after about an eight-week drought, which will might slow your tee shots down the fairway, but it's going to green up all the golf courses a lot better than they have been because of this eight-week drought, so thank goodness for some rain.
I haven't heard anybody complain about it today at all, so I think you're right. Gary, Tim was just talking about, we were both talking about sports, opening up professional sports and so on, with respect to, you know, the pandemic, the state of emergency and so on. And one of the places we could look to for a really good competitive reopening was golf.
Yes, in a way. They've played 3 weeks now. They went from Fort Worth, Texas to Sea Island Plantation to just outside Hartford, Connecticut, with yesterday's finish of the Travelers, which I hope Tim was as pleased as I was that Dustin Johnson won, and he won a tournament on the tour for the, I think it was the 12th or 13th straight year. He's won at least once on the tour. Every year he's been on the tour. I think he's third or fourth behind Palmer and Nicklaus, who won 17, the first 17 years they were on tour. And Tim, am I leaving somebody out in between Dustin Johnson and Jack and Arnold?
I'm not sure. It's not Tiger, I don't think.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Anyways, great to see Dustin win, but there are some warning signals out there, guys. If you were paying attention, they had several big-name players withdraw, including Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka, because of a couple of caddies tested positive for the virus before they started the tournament on Thursday. And that's a little bit of a concern, I'm sure, for Jay Monahan, the commissioner. But as long as it doesn't expand, the numbers don't increase between now and this coming week. They're going to be in Detroit this week. Then they move to Columbus, Ohio, I think, to play in the Jack Nicklaus' Memorial. They might be okay, but I got to believe Jay Monahan's praying to the golfing gods and other gods every night, hoping that this thing doesn't get any worse than it is now. They can handle small numbers on the tour, so that's a good thing, Rick. But I have my concerns, and we'll see how it goes. It's still a little iffy.
Yeah, Gary, you know, I was just reading Harris English became the fifth golfer to test positive, and then you throw in the caddies that have come down positive, and you're getting up into the double digits with individuals involved in the tour, and you're getting into playing in the part of the country where, you know, there's a lot of the virus rolling around right now, and it's surging. And maybe they ought to move all the tournaments to New England, where, especially Massachusetts, where the numbers are decreasing.
Well, they obviously will not do that, but we're certainly hoping that they get the FedEx Cup playoff tournament. I'm sorry, I hope they get the FedEx Cup playoff tournament at TPC Boston played in August. It's a long way from now to August, but Tim, I think it's so iffy. I think all the major league sports to come back, it's still very iffy. It's a one day to week thing, or it's a 1 week at a time thing. And if golf can't manage this COVID 19, no other major league sport will be able to. And
right.
We just have to see what happens this week in Detroit, see what happens next week in Columbus, and hope they can still play at least three of the four majors towards the end of the year. Actually, the PGA, I think, is in early August, and we've got the U.S. Open in September and the Masters in October, if all goes smoothly. But keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I was reading, Gary, an article on Nick Watney, who was the first golfer to test positive, and what he said about his experience is the really scary part about this. He said, I had no fever, I had no cough, and he had one of those whoop straps and for just looking to improve his game. And it, you know, monitors a lot of your vital signals, especially when you're asleep. And you notice noticed an uptick in his breathing pattern. And so he decided to go and ask to be tested, and he came back positive. He says, I have no idea how to get it, how I got it. And I said, you know, that's the thing about this. Most people who get it have no idea how they got it, but they did. And that's the danger in the situation right now. Nobody knows who they're actually exposed to that's given it to them.
Well, the tracking system is another beast, part of the equation down the road. But right now, the key is, I believe, that none of these people affiliated with the PGA Tour who've come down with the virus have needed to be hospitalized and, God forbid, be put on a ventilator. So let's see how this, you know, can very well test positive and still not be symptomatic. And that's good news till so far, but it's a tricky situation, guys. And you know, we've got big numbers climbing in Florida, Texas, and California, and just gonna watch how it goes. And we've never been this way before, and just keep our fingers crossed as we go into week four this week at the Detroit Golf Club, where a lot of the players are skipping. And they played the first 3 weeks, but most of the big names are not playing in Detroit. And a lot of the national golfers have taken a lot of the players to task for not playing Detroit and playing a fourth straight week. But they all want to play if they're eligible. They want to play Nicklaus's tournament next week. They all want to get their picture taken with Nicklaus if they win the tournament.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
I would cheat just to get my picture taken with Jack.
Anyways, the first 3 weeks have been great golf-wise. Like we said last week, another great, very highly competitive, right down to the wire yesterday with Dustin Johnson, almost blowing a two-shot lead with three holes to go and making a routine par 18 to beat Kevin Streelman by one shot. Great show, though, without any gallery out there down there in Cromwell, Connecticut. And the signs are still good. And it gets Dustin Johnson another victory. He's won 21 times now, guys. Hard to believe. But he wants more majors. He only won one major, won that one U.S. Open. The year after, he blew a chance to be in a playoff with Koepka. You may remember at Erin Hills when he missed that short putt on the 72nd hole. But he came right back to win the next year. So maybe this will be the beginning of a big year for Dustin Johnson. One of the nicest, quietest, low-key guys on the tour. I think I've told you before, when I was putting together a book for the 50th anniversary Northeast Amateur, down at Winnemucca, down in Rhode Island, I should say. I called every past champion I could reach, and that included Ben Crenshaw, who called me back, and Dustin Johnson not only called me back, this is back 10 years ago, guys, still, he was a star at that time, and he was the only player of all the players I was trying to chase who left his phone number for me. So I've always appreciated Dustin Johnson because he left his phone number for little old Gary Lehrer.
Where's he from, Gary? Where is he from?
The Carolinas, I think. I think he went to Coastal Carolina, but the fact remains he has an ugly-looking beard, or actually a clean-looking beard. I hate the beards out in the tour, but you know he's partnered with Wayne Gretzky's daughter. They've had two children, I think, and the guy's worth about $1 zillion, and he's got his own jet. But he's a quiet, respectful champion who I appreciate his victory yesterday. And we'll see if he's not playing this week. We'll see if he can get back on track.
You know, I want to ask a question. As a sports writer, as a local guy, covering events and so on, when you're at an event, you know, they'll talk to you and you can get up close and personal, especially back in the day. But what you just said with the fact that he trusted you, he left his phone, I mean, that speaks volumes of the guy's character, more or less, doesn't it?
It does. And, he had a couple of very minor, I'd like to think, went in with the law when he was in college, but that's all water under the bridge. And he's been a very good citizen for golf, a very good face for golf, and I wish him nothing but the best. A couple of late-breaking news stories, if I might report them to you guys before we break away.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
They had the final qualifying round today for the 2020 Massachusetts Amateur Championship coming up in 2 weeks down at the Catansett Club in Marion. And we had 10 players qualify at the Renaissance Club up in April. Ethan Whitney from Oak Hill was a medalist with a 3-under-69. Sam Bush, no relation to George, from George Wright, finished second, 2-under-70. We had a couple of local players who made the grade. Aiden Emmerich from Kernwich shot 72, tied for fifth. Charlie Johnson, formerly from Ferncroft, now from Meadowbrook, shot 72. He made it, as well as Brendan Locke, the second of Tedesco, finished in the final number at 73, one over, that qualifies to play 2 weeks hence at the Catanza Club. And, of course, the big event there, of course, will be Stephen Delisio from Swampscott Salem Country Club and Duke defending his title. That'll be very exciting. Also, they had the first round, guys, of 3 days of the New England Women's Amateur way up in the White Mountains at North Conway Country Club. None of our local gals played any good. Megan Buck from Thorny Lee and clubmate Shannon Johnson from Thorny Lee won two at 72-73. Three local gals are playing, though. Barbara Asimovich from Beverly Golf and Tennis shot 79. Sally DeGan from Sagamore shot 82, and Karen Richardson from Old Newbury shot 89.
Great stuff. Unbelievable stuff. And I was going to say, there's no point in going up to North Conway in the summertime because I ski up there. But I guess I would see the New England women's. That's pretty cool. Gary, we've been batting around, changing the subject here a little bit, you know, kind of talking sports in general. And let me ask you, if I could, I'm going to spring this on you. If I asked you your best sports memory, knee-jerk, best sports memory that just pops into your head immediately, can you tell us something?
That's really a tough one, but probably, guys, probably the first Celtics championship I covered on the scene, that was 1974. Celtics and the Bucks, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Oscar Robertson, a very, you know, very classy tournament, big name playoff finals. Celtics won Game 7 in Milwaukee after losing Game 6 on Friday night to a Kareem Jabbar skyhook at the buzzer in overtime.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience with the Celtics in a championship round. It was the first of five NBA finals I got to cover for the Salem News, and that's always, I think, the most memorable. Of course, the one great factoid, guys, from that tournament beyond, or the finals, beyond the fact that Colin Havlicek and JoJo White led the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Of course, you may remember that on Friday night when the Celtics lost in double overtime, that was the night that John Havlicek had 39 points and was not able to be named MVP, but he was on Sunday after they won on Sunday. But guys, five of the seven games were won, what, Tim?
Five of the seven games.
Five of the seven
not
games
overtime.
Won by the visiting team.
Oh, that's right. Yes. That's right.
The record for the NBA Finals.
I forgot about that. Was Collins coaching in the team at that time?
No, he wasn't, but Don Nelson, Larry Costello was coaching Milwaukee, and Heinsohn was coaching the Celtics. And Collins was playing as those Collins, Havlicek, White, and it was a great series, unbelievable to have five of the seven games.
Steve Kaberski,
right. Steve on that team, right. the great other story of that finals, guys, is after they won Game 7 on Sunday afternoon in Milwaukee, they took a commercial flight home. They take a puddle jumper to Chicago because they could get a big L-10-11 back to Boston Sunday night. And we all flew with the team in those days. And two of the nicest guys on the team, and both guys played key roles, obviously. Paul Westfall and Don Chaney.
I love it.
Both got sick drinking too much champagne in the locker room after the game, and they both had to be wheeled in wheelchairs to the gate.
Is that right?
Milwaukee. Rather embarrassing, but great stories for the old memories.
Oh, but see, that's what I'm talking about, man. And did you ever interview Collins?
Of course. Just a great guy and a little bit eccentric, of course, but it's straightforward and very honest and candid, and the greatest 6'8" center in the history of the game.
Amen to that.
You know,
yeah.
You know, Gary, when I was in college, the stairs to where the Celts came out after halftime, and we were once. You know, you watch on TV and you think he's this really robust, you know, buff kind of guy. He was. I mean, from running around as much as he did, he was thin, and he was going out and battling, you know, Willis Reed, Wes Unseld, and Jabbar. And I'm thinking, my God, how does this guy do this?
Yeah, he had quickness was a big part of it.
Oh, yeah.
Both ends of the floor, but he was strong and muscular with a very lean physique.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite play by Dave Cowens is when, I don't know, it was Lenny Rudolph, somebody called it, cheap tic tac foul.
No,
on him.
Now that's a foul.
And he was
right Mike right with Mike, right with Mike Newell from Houston. He went down the other end of the floor. And Cowens barreled over Newell and defending Mendy. Now that's a foul.
That's a foul. He knocked him right off the court.
Greatest moments in NBA history.
Those are great.
That's a foul.
I'm amazed, guys, that Cowens never wrote any kind of a memoir, because he could have written a great memoir, but no one ever got him to do it. Sadly, there was never a book about Cowens. But
no, and
great memories all the time, guys.
Great segue. Oh, speaking about books, now you have a list of books out that you have written in sports history and so on, and mostly local stuff. The one I want to ask you about that jumps out to me, Gary. All of these sports you have, the books that you've written and so on, and historian articles and so on, most of them have to do with golf, if not all of them. Except there's one that stands out. It says Beverly Hospital, and I'm not familiar with that. Can you give me some information?
Yeah, it's called The Best Cure Possible. It was Beverly Hospital is a fantastic history going back to the late 1800s. Supported by the wealthy of the North Shore, Best Beverly Farms, Manchester, and Hank Romini, who was a golf chum and also delivered my first child from, was at the time chief of staff at Beverly Hospital, that he became the chairman of the board. He always wanted to do a book on the hospital because he had a fantastic archive of photograph albums and newspaper clippings going back to their founding in 1888.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And by the time, and when Hank Romini, the great late Hank Romini, finally had the opportunity, the power, as the chairman of the Board of Trustees to possibly put together the money for a book project like that, he called me, and it was the most fantastically enjoyable project. Amazing people, you know, local people, and it was a joy and a privilege to do it, and I'm very proud of that book. And you know, all these hospitals have great histories, but Beverly's is very unique and extraordinary.
That's amazing. Wow.
Gary, one of the things is you've got so much history there. How do you cull through it and make the selections of things to cover?
Well, you stay as organized as you can. If you're not organized, you're a goner before you even start.
All right,
thankfully, I became pretty organized in the early going of these book projects, and long as you stay organized, you keep everything filed, and of course you also work with who's ever paying you to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a couple of people who are always your key people inside the institution we're talking about here, Beverly Hospital, and to guide you along, and always some difficult decisions, but you figure out how to do it. You put an outline together, and it was a lot of fun, and great people have made that a great community hospital over the years, just like we have in Salem.
I think you already answered the question I'm going to ask. This is the last one for tonight, Gary, but I tried to produce a video one time, and I never, ever, ever got satisfied with it. And finally, the person I was working with, he said, you know, you got to stop. You got to put it out there, because that's it. You have to come to a decision. Is it like that with a book, or as you say, does the organization, you have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you know when you're at the end?
Good question. You have to be firm, and you have to be objective all the way. You can't be too subjective, particularly when you make a decision that this is enough.
Mm-hmm.
But you're never doing it by yourself. You never do it alone. Like all these books I've done for country clubs and for St. John's Prep and Beverly Hospital and Bishop Malwick, and there's always someone you're working with alongside who is from the institution, and that person is as important to the book project as I am.
Okay, well, your column,
the author and researcher.
Your column is all yours, so tease the Salem News column for us this week.
Yes, well, we've seen some, thank you for asking, we've seen the loss of some nice public golf courses around here in the last few years. Middleton, Lakeview, Candlewood, Nipswich. But an exception to that rule, thankfully, is Wenham Country Club, which has been in the property has been in the same family, the Tarr family, since Mr. Tarr from Rockport came up here to Wenham and married a Miss Kimball, whose father owned all that property where Wenham Country Club now sits. So we're talking to Norm Tarr, the general manager and man who's in charge over Wenham Country Club these days, continuing the Tarr family tradition, and he has no intention of doing anything but keeping that a golf course for the long-term future, hopefully, and we'll be writing about Wenham Country Club this week.
Looking forward to it. Gary, have another safe week, and so enlightening. Thanks for extending it out for us here this evening. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. You know that, guys. I love to talk, and I love to talk sports.
We too. Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Gary.
Right. Take care. That is Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, and just an encyclopedia of sports knowledge here on North Shore. Take one more quick break. We'll wrap this thing up with Coach Kearns here. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening. So thanks for being with us. We'll be right back one more time.
Harrington Trophy has been rewarding the North Shore for over 30 years with quality custom awards, screen printing, embroidery, and more. We pride our family-owned business on our exceptional customer service and quality products for the right price. Custom t-shirts, sweatshirts, warm-up suits, hats, along with the area's top trophies, plaques, glass awards, we are the one-stop shop for end-of-the-year banquets or advertising your small business through apparel. Come see us at Harrington Trophy, Chestnut Street, Lynn, or harringtontrophy.com.
Enjoy the taste of summer all year round at Cherry Farm Creamery. Pick up an ice cream cake for that special occasion. Cherry Farm Creamery offers the best ice cream right off Route 128 on Conant Street in Danvers. Or visit them at cherryfarmcreamery.com.
All right, hold on. Tim, you got to relay this. We were just talking off the air here about Dave Cowens and how Cowens would get I think he were number 18. Bailey Howell used to have that number, and Cowens would just get this look in his eyes, and his eyes would just turn to shark's eyes. It's almost like a special effect, and then he would just dominate a game, and he wasn't the biggest guy on the court.
Oh no, and it was just this ferocity, you know, and that was a time in the NBA where you had three great centers who weren't more than 6'8", 6'9". Again, I mentioned them earlier, Willis Reed of the Knicks, Wes Unseld of the then Baltimore.
Yeah, but they were as wide as they were tall.
That they were, and then you had Collins at 6'8", and they just had monumental battles. And it was in the paint. There was no, you know, let's sit outside and throw up threes. And though Dave Cowens could go out there and stick a jump shot every now and then, that made him that much harder to defend. I remember watching him as a senior down at Florida, and that was he was the apple of Red Auerbach's eye even then. And he was just phenomenal. I mean, he was scary. He was so good.
Oh, yeah.
What I was mentioning also was that in that playoff series against the Bucks was the role that Hank Finkel played as Dave Cowens' backup.
I saw Hank Finkel.
He gave them really great minutes of tough defense, and he sacrificed his fouls to keep Dave in the game.
I saw Hank Finkel at Panera in Beverly last year. So Hank Finkel is still in the area. He's still youngish looking. He's still tall, and it's great to see him. And that's funny. You should bring him up. You're right. I forgot about that. He was an integral part of that team.
Yep, he really was. Because the NBA was such a physical league back then, and it was physical that you had to have a guy. You know, he wasn't a scorer. He'd give you the odd, you know, putback every now and then. But when he was on the floor, you didn't need to guard him. But his job was to play defense.
Yeah, he was a sweeper back there. He cleaned the glass. I remember that. Yeah, and yep. he was extremely thin. I mean, he looked fragile, but big dude.
Yes, he was.
All right. I think that's going to take care of it for tonight, Coach. We filled it out. Hopefully, we'll get back on track with high school sports next week. Sort of a void here this week. No Fiesta sports. If you check out the video right here on our sports page that Bill did with the Salem News sports guys, Nick Kukuru does talk about Fiesta sports years past and so on, some of the great champions. So that's all right here. You can check that out. But again, no Fiesta, no fireworks coming up on the 4th of July. But I think as with a General Chesty Puller, I think said on Iwo Jima, discretion is the better part of valor. Not that we're in anywhere close to that kind of category in terms of danger, but to lay back and just let this thing run its course and do what you're supposed to do, at least it's working here in the great state, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Well, it's because we've got a governor who chose to lead and not to accede to the wishes of people who know less or assume he knows more than the medical profession. And in that way, and for as many people who unfortunately have gotten sick and died, it would have been, I think, a lot worse had it not been for the leadership of Charlie Baker.
And it has become routine. People have, I don't want to say have gotten used to it, but they have adapted. People are doing the social distancing. People are respective of the other person's personal bubble. And I think that it's going to be this way for quite a while. But talking to Lenny Linquata today of the Gloucester House, he has great confidence that the biotech industry, the medical profession, the military, if you will, and the entire people who are dedicated to fight this thing are going to come up with some kind of a solution in the not-too-distant future so that we can get back to something that might approach what we were used to experiencing. I'm not sure we're ever going to go back to that particular normalcy.
Well, you know, like Fauci said this week, you know, we're still in the first wave. So is this going to be around? Yeah, it's going to be around. And it all depends on how we attack it now is going to dictate the intensity that it's going to come back with in the future.
You know, I think
we see the flu come back, and everybody goes, well, the flu kills 70,000 people a year. Okay, well, this has killed over 120,000 in 3 months just in the United States.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got to be smart. We've got to be diligent. We've got to be committed. You know, and being smart is the most critical part. Listen to those who know what they're talking about.
And we have to be patient. We got to be patient.
And don't listen to those who don't.
Okay. All right, Coach. Hey, thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun tonight, Tim. That was good.
That's for sure. I will talk to you next week, Rick.
All right, Coach. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Okay, Rick.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That is Tim Kearns of MSO. He is our Goodwill Ambassador and Sports Analyst Extreme. There ain't nobody better for all the sports. We appreciate it. He can talk sports, and he understands, can explain the game to people on the radio, which is, you know, that's a talent. And loves kids, too. There you go. All right. Anyway, that's it for me. Thanks for joining us. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. I'm Rick Moore, along with our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Thanks for being with us.